Accession number 17747, reel 13.
Where did you go when you left the camp at Philippeville?
We went by train, which itself was quite an experience, because we went, apart from one or two so-so Pullman coaches for officers on the very long train, the rest were what we would regard in Britain as cattle trucks. They were enclosed wagons, but in French on the outside it said 8 horses or 32 men. And this was the setting in which we crossed the desert. We went south, to places whose names I can't remember, and then turned east and crossed into Tunisia at some point. And on the way we encountered a trainload, I noted, of prisoners of war. It's the first ones I'd ever seen, and largely Italians, but also some Germans, and they all seemed pleasant enough insofar as we could exchange a word or two with them. We had to wash and shave at numerous halts on the way. We had to eat out of tins and so on.
Do you remember anything that these prisoners of war said to you?
No, I don't. No, no, no. I don't think we had much common language, actually. The nearest would have been French in my case, and there wouldn't have been much of that. But we did have incidents on the way. For example, having crossed into Tunisia, where we saw some United States train locomotives, which is rather surprising. The Americans were very good at getting heavy equipment in, and there they had their own locomotives as well as American troops, really, for the first time. I noted that we had to guard the station all night at a place called Mateur, M-A-T-E-U-R, because parachutists were said to have been dropped. Then we continued the train journey to Bizerta, which had been bombed during the night as we were approaching it, and it looked a complete ruin, a war ruin. No civilians were visible. We had a long march. I was in charge at this time. I'd been given charge of 32 or something like that, Royal Engineers, although they were quite a different regiment from mine. And I had to escort them to this dreadful transit camp in a sort of no man's land of sand and scrubby grass. The place was, I've noted, was hellishly hot and full of flies. It was called Texas Camp, obviously having been set up by the Yanks. Managed to get away from this into the nearest small town. I think it was called Ferryville, where we talked to French girls, played table tennis, and had a good dinner. And we also heard, and this is, we're now at the 8th of September, we heard on the radio that Italy had fallen. I wish to heaven it had been true, but it wasn't. What had happened was that Italy had surrendered and Mussolini had gone. However, it raised our morale. And we moved out to a concentration area close to the beach, made our beds in the open under the stars, and settled down to wait for boats. We still didn't know quite where we were going, but there had already been a peeling off of quite a lot of troops who were going to Sicily, so we assumed we were probably going to bypass Sicily and go straight to Italy.
But when you were put on the train,
mm.
Can you remember whether you went as an individual or whether you went as part of a formed-up drop?
We were a mixed-up batch of reinforcements. This was the essence of it. There were a bit of this and a bit of that. I noted somewhere in here that I had with me still just one fellow subaltern with whom I had been at Watford at the transit camp for the gunners. But the rest were, I don't remember any infantry as such. I think it was largely supporting arms, gunners, engineers, signallers, and so on.
Do you have any notion of roughly how many of you there were on the train as a whole?
I can only speculate. I didn't count, assuming that this very long train of about 30 trucks had about each 30 men in. We're talking about 1,000 people, I should think.
Did you know who was in overall charge of the train?
No.
You didn't know who OC Troops was, OC Train?
No, no. There was an RTO. Is that the term, RTO?
Railway Transport
Officer. Railway Transport Officer. We just kept to ourselves, and we were more concerned to this. Don't forget, we were young men, 21, seeing abroad for the first time. This was the first time we'd ever been out of Britain, and I noted the lovely country with granite outcrops, with endless slow progress of these cattle trucks, little Arab boys selling melons by the side of the train, or bartering them for chocolate or other rations, seeing camels for the first time in their natural environment. It was all very exciting. We were tourists as much as soldiers.
Did your engineers have any idea of where they were going or what they were going to do?
Oh, I think we all knew we were going to Italy by this time.
You haven't yet been assigned to a regiment?
Oh, no, no question of that. No question of that at this stage. Riding on the footplate in the Algerian dusk, which I've noted, was quite an interesting thing. Anyway, we got to this port side sort of depot, transit camp in Bizerta, and I noted that we were told to try on our full kit in preparation for perhaps having to abandon everything else if a ship should go down or whatever. And we doubled round the field or the beach in this full kit, also as practice. We were still in the open after 2 or 3 days, and the most telling memory of this time is the dysentery. The chaps with the most terrible tummy troubles, and some of them never got onto the boats at all. I mean, they were just too ill.
Have you any idea what caused that?
Oh, it was the flies, the heat, the insanitary. I mean, the latrines were awful. The food was not very clean. I don't suppose the water supply was very clean either. I put a good many people I really distressed with bad tummies, etc. Also, the American camp nearby, and they had all their lights on to celebrate the fall of Italy, despite the fact that it was the Eighth Army who landed, not the American Army at this stage. I think, in fact, I've noted that on the 10th of September, I think the Americans probably went in with the Fifth Army into Salerno about the 9th, the previous evening, though we didn't know that at this time.
What was your own state of health like? Were you still healthy and fit?
I was not, actually. I've noted that I was developing scabs on my face with, I suppose, sand and dirt. And also I had a resurgence of something I hadn't had since childhood, which was asthma. I was suffering from breathing problems. So, not very fit, no.
Would that have been brought on by the dusty atmosphere or some other?
I don't know. I guess it was just the heat. One had never encountered such heat, you see. This was early September in North Africa, jolly hot. Hotter than we'd ever known in our lives.
Had you received any medical advice on how to cope with the heat? What you could do to mitigate its effect?
Only keeping your head covered, that was one of the main things. And of course I think that by this time we were probably, I'm not sure, probably on Mepocrine tablets for malaria.
Presumably those would have been started before you arrived in the malarial zone.
That's right.
Build up your resistance.
Exactly, they had to be. I haven't noted when we started them, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was as soon as we had landed at Philippeville. And probably, medically speaking, it should have been before, except that that would have meant telling us where we were going. I've noted on just before we got on our boats, I put on my second pip, because it was automatic to become a lieutenant in those days, 6 months after your commission, and this was the date. I noted that I was nominally an RC, though never a very serious religionist of any kind, and I attended Mass in tropical kit held by a chaplain Murphy, who was from China, very moving under African palm trees in the open. Are we still going, are we?
Yeah.
Then we got our orders to move, and we had a terribly hot march in full kit and straight on to an LST, a landing ship tank. And it moved off from the floodlit repair yards of Bizerta under a nearly full moon on the night of the 12th of September. 13th, blue water, no mosquitoes, thank goodness. We snatched sleep on the steel top deck of the LST. It was an American ship. The crew seemed okay, but the Yankee officers I'd noted were a lousy set, very selfish about their own comforts, and to hell with us. I suppose this is understandable, since it was their boat.
Did you notice anything about their relations with the crew?
With the crew? No, I can't say that I remember anything special about it. Presumably the crew would be, well, the whole lot would be American naval officers,
yes, yeah,
and crew. I think one of the things, of course, was that at this time the black Americans were still regarded as something separate, and the relationships were not as close as they might have been. I'm not sure, you would know better than I, how far American Negro troops at this time were allowed to carry weapons and actually to expected to fight as opposed to being supporting troops. However, that's by the way. We went into a second night on the Mediterranean, and during the night there was the magnificent thing of Stromboli, the active volcano, glowing in the distance. Tuesday the 14th September, we sailed the whole afternoon up a German-occupied coastline of southern Italy and came across an astonishing fleet of Allied ships. And as we took our place in this fleet, we were nerve-wrackingly dive-bombed. This was the first sort of personalised attack, somebody actually wanting to kill me, that I'd encountered.
Did you take it personally?
Personally and group, but I mean, you knew that somebody was after you and that it was not for fun. I think it was Junkers 88 coming straight out of the setting sun. This was their favourite thing, so you couldn't see them, and the frightening deliberately enhanced engine noises were quite terrifying. And to see the bombs actually landing at the side of the ship, they were doing what in artillery terms would be a bracketing job. They didn't hit us, but some people were hit. And I noted we are at the Salerno bridgehead as first line reinforcements following last week's invasion here against what is now not an Italian army but a German one. And this was the sobering knowledge that the Germans had decided to defend Italy, and that we were in for major fighting.
So you were heading in for the Salerno bridgehead, and you knew that you were in for serious fighting against the Germans. Where had you got this information and these ideas? Do you remember how that got through to you?
It was certainly not conveyed in any official form. I mean, it was simply word of mouth from people who had listened to radios, no doubt knowledge was conveyed down the line from headquarters of the various American and British armies. We just knew it. I can't remember how.
There's no formal process of briefings?
No. We were not organised enough for this. We were a miscellaneous body of tourists in uniform.
On the LST?
On the LST. We knew this, and of course, as to knowing that the Germans were likely to be a more difficult proposition, this was common knowledge from what had happened in North Africa. And so we disembarked on the beach in darkness in the early hours of the 15th of September, at a hellish march along the open beach. Hellish because not of bombing or anything else, but because it was a mixture of shingle and sand and it was dark. And we had to walk a long way with our kit.
How did you get ashore? Did the LST come right in and give you a dry landing?
Yes, in our case we had a dry landing. We were lucky.
You didn't have to transship into
No. We it was a good beach. It had been chosen, presumably partly for this purpose, and the just like a ro-ro ferry these days, it it provided a landing stage and a dry landing. It had to be, because there were vehicles on board, guns and so on, and they had to, had to have a reasonable ramp approach to a dry beach. I can't remember much about the vehicles, but I remember we got off first, and we went to sleep in the open in a field of tomatoes until it was daylight, to see these pear-shaped Italian tomatoes for the first time en masse in a field was another minor experience.
How did you actually get directed to this tomato field? I mean, when you got off the LST, were you just following a queue of men in front of you, or did you have anyone?
Well, we're following queue, also following signs. I mean, there were rough signs saying this way, arrows.
Yes.
And of course, we were not far from the place where the ship was unloaded, because I noted that the first thing in daylight had to go back to collect unloaded kit
from the ship.
From the ship, well, from where it had been
dumped
en masse on the shore. There was a sort of pile of kit. We had to go and collect it. And I don't know quite how we made the next move, but I do know that I had to report to the 46th Divisional Headquarters. And 46th Div, I think, was a Midlands Division, Sherwood Foresters and all that.
Had you had any previous contact with 46?
No, no, never heard of them.
And had they heard of you?
Only that we would be no doubt arriving in a miscellaneous batch of people, but I was only with them for half an hour, so it didn't much matter. I was sent from there, presumably under knowledge of where reinforcements were required because of casualties, must have been quite well handled. And 46D was the first place where people were reporting, and they were being used as a sort of immediate transit for directing people elsewhere. And I was directed to join the 64th Field Regiment in the 56th London Division. And I presumably was given, well, I must have been given a lift to this with other people, including the one chap who'd been with me in Watford. And
he was still with you then? You were still...
We two were still together. We were the only two young gunner subalterns still together. Indeed, the only two altogether, as far as I know. We joined the 56th Division. The 64th Field Regiment reported to the adjutant and were sent to our jobs. And I was told that I was to be Assistant Command Post Officer, ACPO, in number 245 Battery, which I went straight away to join. And I inherited some kit from... I'd lost some of my kit. I inherited some, I remember very clearly, from an officer who'd just been killed the day before. His greatcoat, for example, one or two things useful for being in action. A chap called Nick Straker, who was the son, I think, of a major stationer's in the City of London, Straker's. Sorry.
I was going to ask, where were the regiment when you joined them? You know, what was their location?
Oh, well, the location was is easy to describe in the sense that it was a very small bridgehead. The Salerno bridgehead had been established by the American Fifth Army under Mark Clark, and it consisted of some American divisions and I think two British divisions, the 46th and the 56th. And it was it had advanced a few miles fairly easily, and then in the usual way the Germans had arrived with massive counter-attacking forces, I think about nine divisions, and had reduced the size of the bridgehead. So it was in a pretty desperate plight when we arrived, and had been through one or two quite critical nights with heavy fighting, and was Hitler's orders were to force them back into the sea. And this was the situation in which we arrived. So, I mean, the as seen from people who were there already and conveyed to us when we arrived, it was pretty hairy, though they were taking it very well. I didn't see any signs of panic. The morale seemed to be stupendously good given the situation. And, you know, I heard my first shells fired in anger, some of them landing reasonably close. And as a sort of reflector on life, an observer of myself, so to speak, I noted wryly that it seemed to be a significant change from a depot in Watford to actually shells being fired in anger. We were only boys, you see, we were only 21. Old by standards of the First War in the trenches, but still only undergraduates, really. And we went and took up our jobs, and I noted that we were less than 3 miles from the Germans, although had we been infantry reinforcements, we would have been very much closer. And, of course, we knew that we were headline stuff, because at this time there was no second front, and this was the prime news insofar as occasional BBC news bulletins came through to us. We knew that we were the first line news, and that we were really there. It felt very exposed.
What kind of positions were the guns of your battery occupying in Joyland? Were they properly dug in?
They were properly dug in, all right, yes. They were well dug in. They had to be. Indeed, I noted, since you, as you use the words, I noted on the 17th of September, settle down in command post, which is well dug in, the command post as well as the guns. And note that my CPO, the lieutenant CPO, was a very good Australian called Miller. And the battery commander is a quiet ex-city man called Major Masters, already having a military cross. And I noted the sort of sociology of what I had joined, and it was city. I mean, they were stockbrokers, accountants, one or two regulars, but mainly city territorial gunners.
This must have been something of a contrast with the 171 Field Regiment.
That's right, which was Northern Scots and Northern Englanders. These were all city gents in uniform.
What about the soldiers? Were they...
They were...
City gents as well?
Well, they were less the gents, but they were the clerks from the stockbrokers' offices and so on. Banking. But mind you, of course, the processes, 3-4 years of war that had been going on, had caused a considerable mix, and it would be wrong to suggest that these were these stereotypes were by any means universal. But the backbone, the core of the regiment, as I knew it, was city gents.
How had they managed to get an Australian as battery commander?
Oh, the processes of switching. I presume that he, in fact, I'm pretty sure that he was over in Britain as a student, as a Rhodes Scholar, when the war broke out, and presumably joined the army and stayed here, didn't go back to Australia. I think that's right.
You mentioned that the command post for the battery was well dug in.
Mm.
How many men would there normally be in the command post when it was operating? what sort of size was it? How was it?
Now, we're talking there about a battery command post, yes. Aren't we? The BC, the troop commanders would be based there when they were not actually out on in observation posts. GPOs, there would be some signallers, very important people. I don't know, I can't remember, but I would have thought about 20 people in the command post. That's a rough guess.
Must have been a substantial... bunker of some sort.
This was in charge of 8 guns. You see, there's 2 troops of 4 guns. And there were 3 batteries, so there were 3 command posts in the regiment. 8 guns would occupy the gun crews of about 48, 50 men. And these 20 or so would be in support of 50 actually firing the guns. Yes, I would guess that's about right, but I would need to research it in the regimental history, you know, to see exactly how they were deployed.
What was the ground like?
It was flat. It was orchards. I've got all sorts of notes about the bizarre contrast of fighting this horrid business and seeing bodies and looking at grapes and tangerines and walnuts growing alongside as you did so. It was rich agricultural land.
What could you see when you look forward from the position of the battery?
My recollection is of seeing some very distant hills, which no doubt with powerful binoculars were very useful to German observation posts, and we had the sense of being in full view. We ourselves had little opportunity for observation posts except no doubt the roofs of or the top stories of houses, farmhouses, a church if you could find one. And I mean, all the odds were in favour of the Germans.
They had the advantage of the ground.
They could see us. They had the advantage of the ground, quite right.
Do you remember who you were supporting? Which infantry?
Well, it was the 56th London Division. Our normal, the brigade we normally supported was the 7th and 8th. I think it was the 7th and 8th, or it could have been the 8th and 9th Royal Fusiliers. And a battalion of the Queen's. I think that was the norm. Or London Scottish.
When you were assigned to a particular battalion, normally on call to them, or were you being directed on a more centralised basis while you were in the British?
No. I mean, the control was fairly tight, obviously. I mean, the colonel was in close contact and virtually lived with the infantry brigadier. I'm trying to remember frantically the number of the brigade we were with, which was the 2 Fusiliers battalions and I think the London Scottish. We supported my battery, the battery I was in, supported one of the Fusilier battalions. And this meant that my battery commander spent a lot of time with the lieutenant colonel commanding the Fusilier Battalion.
How far away from you were the infantry divisions?
A mile and a half.
A mile and a half ahead.
Yes. And then beyond them was, I suppose, outposts of their infantry companies, recce, forward pickets of one sort or another, and then the enemy. We were not far away. I mean, we were nowhere near the range of our maximum range of our guns from the Germans.
Do you remember anything about the fire plans that you held in the...
No, I remember there were fire plans, but I don't remember anything about them at all. After all this time, I mean, there were plans for Stonks. We had targets which were already charted. And, of course, the whole thing was on a fairly small bridgehead scale, so that the targets tended to be the same ones, because the Germans would be coming up the same routes, past the same crossroads, tending to use observation posts in villages like Battipaglia and others, which were fairly clear to us from our maps. We had quite good maps. I don't know how these had been done or who'd produced them, but I remember being impressed at the time by the competence of an army which was able to land with maps already on a reasonable scale.
Do you remember seeing any aerial photographs?
Not at this stage. I saw a good many within a few months. Indeed, I still have some. I can show you them. But not at this stage, no.
Were the maps good enough to fire off? Could you actually fire off the map as opposed to firing on the basis of observation?
Well, you could certainly start with the map, and indeed we did. I mean, yes, they were quite good. I've got some of the maps too, which I can show you another time. But at my level of being a very junior assistant command post officer, we were told which target, we were told the map reference, and we had to translate this into orders for the guns. We were